Your requested media will begin after a short message from our sponsor.
Here's Sam from Cure Solutions. Sam, let's say a business doesn't have a full-time IT department. Can Cure Solutions help?
Yeah, we actually provide a total solution to the customer, and regardless of what their problems are, we will send out a certified technician to your location, go over your needs and your budget, and make sure the system that you purchase will meet all of your needs and be affordable.
Then what?
Then we'll come out and install your entire network.
And later, if we have problems or need upgrades?
We service what we sell. We'll always be there for you after the sale, 24 hours a day.
So you're the cure for business computer problems.
We are Cure Solutions.
At Cure Solutions, we are the total solution. We employ and train Microsoft certified professionals, Dell certified system experts, and Apple certified technicians.
This is Sam from Cure Solutions in downtown Burlington, also Mount Pleasant, Fairfield, and the new office in Fort Madison. Where is it exactly?
It's on Avenue G, 609 Avenue G, near Audio Oddities and the Pandemonium downtown Fort Madison.
Cure Solutions, downtown Burlington, Mount Pleasant, Fairfield, and now downtown Fort Madison.
News this hour at townhall.com. I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. Protesters outside a Donald Trump rally last night in Albuquerque, New Mexico grew violent. They even harassed people entering the venues, saying they were involved in a walk of shame just by going into the event. As for Trump, he kicked out another supporter who was an anti-Trump supporter, I should say, who was sympathetic with those outside who rioted against police, throwing burning T-shirts, rocks, and bottles. Trump's supporters, though, responded with chants of their own. Build that wall was their chant. Some angry words exchanged on Capitol Hill over a defense bill.
Senator John McCain accuses the Senate Minority Leader of slow walking the bill.
I would think at some point that the defense of this nation would take priority over partisan priorities. And obviously, that message has not gotten through to Senator Harry Reid. It's disgraceful.
What's disgraceful, says Senator Reid, is the way Senator McCain wrote the bill.
I think it's appropriate for my staff, speaking for me personally, to be able to go through that bill that was decided in secret.
The National Defense Authorization Act sets defense policy. Linda Kenyon, Washington.
House Speaker Paul Ryan among those now blasting Veterans Affairs Secretary Bob McDonald's downplaying of the time it takes for veterans to get treated. McDonald comparing the experience of waiting for health care to Disneyland guests who have to wait for a ride. And Paul Ryan says it's just another example of problems at the VA.
Bonuses are still being handed out like normal. Waste, fraud, and abuse is still rampant. And meanwhile, our veterans still wait for care far too long.
Ryan called McDonald's comments beyond the pale and another example of the poor job that the Department of Veterans Affairs is doing for the nation's veterans. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow was up 213 points, NASDAQ up 95. The Dow opens for trading at 17,706. More on these stories from townhall.com.
This is Eric Metaxas. One of my most cherished possessions is my honorary doctorate from Liberty University. You're probably familiar with Liberty, the world's largest Christian university, founded in 1971 by the late Dr. Jerry Falwell. What you might not know is that Liberty University also has the country's largest private nonprofit online university. Today, over 95,000 students around the world enjoy the same quality education as Liberty's residential students in Lynchburg, Virginia. Ranked consistently among the top 10 online universities because of their high retention and graduation rates, Liberty offers hundreds of degree programs. If you've always wanted to obtain your degree but thought it was impossible, check out Liberty's online programs. For more information, pick up your cell phone, dial pound 250, and say the keywords Liberty University. Discover how affordable and flexible a Liberty education can be. Dial pound 250 now and say the keywords Liberty University.
President Obama is pressing for greater human rights in Vietnam. White House correspondent Greg Cluxton reports.
On his second full day in Vietnam, the president met with activists, including a pastor and advocates for the disabled. However, a handful of others were prevented from meeting with Mr. Obama, prompting the White House to protest to Vietnam's government. The president said Vietnam has made remarkable strides in many ways, but there are still areas of significant concern. Greg Clugston, The White House.
Republicans controlling the Senate have passed legislation to block new Obama administration rules that would have required financial professionals to put their clients' best interests first when giving out advice. That's something that some people say could have a dampening effect.
Promotes less advice or no advice at all to a small saver and free exemption from being under the law to a big company managing their savings.
Senator Johnny Isaacson says the new rule gives short shrift to smaller retirement accounts. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. Western and south central areas of Kansas assessing the damage after severe storms across the plains, downed trees and power lines, and damaged rural homes and outbuildings. At least two people were critically injured. Tornadoes were reported in several counties. In Oklahoma, the Highway Patrol says one person drowned about 50 miles northeast of Oklahoma City when a vehicle was swept into a drainage culvert. Storm Prediction Center lead forecaster Rich Thompson in Norman, Oklahoma, says about a third of the country, in fact, can brace for more rough weather over the next few days.
It looks like we won't be quite as active as we were yesterday, but we still have some risk of at least isolated severe storms into areas like Missouri, Arkansas, Iowa.
Ford is recalling some of its top-selling vehicles to fix a fluid leak that can reduce braking power. The recall covers about 271,000 F-150 pickups between the 2013 and 2014 model years. More on these stories from townhall.com. From Washington, I'm Bob Agnew.
Hi, I'm Kelly Johnson, and I'm a certified financial planner at Farmers and Merchants Bank and Trust. As a service to you, we offer full comprehensive financial planning to all F&M Bank and Trust clients free of charge. My approach to planning is different from other financial planners in this area, as I am not a broker. I do not sell investments or insurance products. I approach financial planning as a process of taking your life's goals and creating a financial strategy to help you reach these goals. No matter where you are with your life's plan, I can help you reach your financial goals every step of the way. The objective to the process is simple. It is to build and maintain a financial plan tailor-made to your values, your goals, and the lifestyle that you would like to achieve or maintain. I want to help you on your path to financial success. Give me a call at 319-754-BANK. That's 319-754-2265. Farmers and Merchants Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Protect your car's finish with a thorough cleaning at Waterworks Car Wash. I recommend our credit card-enabled touchless automatic wash. Our touchless wash is the most complete automatic car wash for the money. We guarantee it. If you prefer to wash it yourself and you've got the time, then we've got the shine. We have the most coin-operated self-serve wash bays anywhere in the area in the only motorcycle bay around. Unlike the others, our bays are insulated and our water is soapy and hot enough to really clean deep down. We are Waterworks Car Wash near Mazio's on Roosevelt Avenue with attendants on duty every day from 7 to 5:30. Ask about our new detail shop for a showroom clean car inside and out without ever lifting a finger. Waterworks Car Wash on Roosevelt Avenue. We fight grime.
Life, so they say, is but a game and they let it slip away. Love, like the autumn sun, should be dying, but it's only just begun. Like the twilight in the road up ahead, they don't see just where we're going. And all the secrets in the universe, for the fools, and they let them drift away. Peace, like the silent dove, should be flying, but it's only just begun. Like Columbus in the olden days, we must gather all our courage, sail our ships out on. Come and go, take us up, always up.
living is easy. I wanna cry if it makes it worthwhile. I may never pass this way again. That's why I want it with you. 'Cause you make me feel like I'm more than a friend. Like I'm the journey and you're the journey's end.
Minutes exactly after 8 o'clock, KCPS, and we're going to get with our interviewee here in just a moment. I might as well set it up for you so I get this part out of the way. He is Dr. Sandy Addis. He's the director of the National Dropout Prevention Center Network at Clemson University. This is a website you can follow along with at dropoutprevention.org. dropoutprevention.org. It is designed as a resource for school systems and other people involved in education to use, a clearinghouse website, if you will, that has all of the most current data and research on it. And it is meant to be a tool for teachers and school districts and school boards and parents and everybody involved in all of that. So, we will discuss the dropout problem at Burlington High School again with the director of the National Dropout Prevention Center at Clemson in a moment. He's running a bit late with a other interview. We had the two other so-called experts already in last week, if you remember, Franklin Schargel, Dr. Franklin Schargel, Strategies to Help Solve Our School Dropout Problem, his book, and then Russell Rumberger last week, Dropping Out, Why Students Drop Out of High School and What Can Be Done About It. He was pretty interesting, actually. And both of them used this resource that we're about to interview on now as well. So, some of the things that we've learned already that are consistent throughout all the resources in this field are that it is a process. How did they phrase it exactly? They said, this is an interesting way to look at it, I feel like. It's in the conclusion. Yeah. Here it is. Dropping out is often considered a status or educational outcome that can be readily measured at a particular point in time, but it is more appropriately viewed as a process of disengagement that occurs over time. When you view it in that way, warning signs for students at risk of dropping out often appear in elementary school, providing ample time to intervene. Good morning, you're on the air.
Good morning, Fred. This is Sandy Addis at the National Dropout Prevention Center in Clemson, South Carolina.
How are things at Clemson today?
all things are great at Clemson. It's a beautiful, beautiful day here.
That's good. I was recapping two previous interviews we had on this topic last week. We are trying to do a series of what can be done. I think you're up to speed on how our local school district is failing in this particular area and some others, but this one is the one we're focused on because this has been around in Burlington for about a decade, this problem. And some of the things we've learned already, I'm sure you already know. I was just reading that dropping out is often considered a status or educational outcome that is measured at a particular point in time, but it is more appropriately viewed as a process of disengagement that occurs over time.
That's a very true statement, Fred.
And when you look at it that way, you realize it's not a high school dropout problem we're having. We got to go all the way back to the grade schools here in our town to start to work on this disengagement issue.
That's very, very true, Fred. It's a process. Kids don't just wake up one morning and think, gee, I think I'll drop out today. What a novel idea. They disengage over time. It's very rare that a child will drop out of school for a single cause or a single incident. It does happen, but it's not the norm.
Now, your website has been very helpful to us. I stumbled on it when I was doing research for this. And that's how we got to you, dropoutprevention.org. It's designed, I guess, for educators, parents, school boards. How long has this been around?
It's been around a long time. The National Dropout Prevention Center is actually the nation's oldest and longest standing organization that has been involved in dealing with the dropout issue. Founded in 1986. It's been there years now. I've only been there a couple of years, but it's a long-standing organization. It's also the nation's go-to resource. That website that you went to is actually the world's most utilized dropout prevention resource. We're the number one Google hit out of about a million possibilities when you Google the phrase dropout prevention. And of course, what we do is we exist to support the people across the country that work to address the dropout issue, primarily educators, but sometimes policymakers, agency folks of different types, but mostly educators. And we have, as a matter of fact, we have about a half million folks a year use our website as a resource.
Wow, that's great. And so where and how does all the funding for this happen, and what is Clemson's role in this?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Clemson University is the home of the National Dropout Prevention Center. That's because back in 1986, some folks gave some money and specified it had to be at Clemson to found the thing, which was fine. But we just happened to be there. We're affiliated with the School of Education at Clemson, but we work all over the country. Funding-wise, we're a national nonprofit. We are supported by contributions. We have some sponsors. We have contract work that we do with school districts, with state departments, with sometimes U.S. Department of Education. And so we're supported by those resources. We're supported by grant funding. We're frequently looking for grants to do this kind of work. So we have about a dozen folks in our shop here at Clemson that work all over the country. We have another 12-14 researchers around the country at different universities that work with us on research to address this issue. And then we have another 15 or so folks that are practitioners that we bring in on special projects and things. So we have a pretty good crew of folks. We've done work in all 50 states. We do a number of large conference events a year that address this issue, and typically over a year's period of time, we'll have about 4,000 folks that will attend our training events. So we're all over the country, but we exist to help people who address this issue.
That's great. And I didn't mean anything by asking about your funding, only that one thing I've learned about at least local education in a given school district, ours, we spend an inordinate amount of time on financial issues, on money issues, on blaming things on money. Meanwhile, they're educating 4,000 students total in our town as the right enrollment, and we're paying over $61 million our end of what the public is paying them. This doesn't include whatever the government might give when
Sure.
I couldn't help but notice that when a school goes on the watch list, the government gives them money. So
that's true.
They're rewarding the failure. I mean, it seems backward because when you incentivize something, you get more of it. So I don't know what the connection to money is, but it's there somewhere.
Well, it is an issue, and of course, in education, education costs money. We got, most school districts are 80-85% salaries and personnel cost, and so when you do dropout prevention, it's a labor intensive effort, and it does require people. It also, though, requires creativity. It requires a lot of other folks involved. You mentioned the fact or the idea that this is not just a high school issue. If I could speak to that for a moment.
Please do.
One of the things that we've done historically when we look at this problem, and we've been, as a country, we've been concerned about dropouts for about 30 years. Matter of fact, started in the early 80s when we started paying closer attention to it and being concerned about the economic impact and the social and the personal impact of non-school completion on kids and families and communities. And one of the things that we've done is we have said, well, they drop out of high school, it must be a high school problem. What grade do they drop out of? Well, in many places, it's often ninth grade. Well, it must be a ninth grade problem. And so we've hung the responsibility for this issue on a very small number of educators. In reality, it belongs to everybody, and it belongs not just to the educators across all grade levels, but it belongs to the community. One of our 15 effective strategies, the National Dropout Prevention Center over the years has done a lot of research. We've come up with 15 strategy categories of things that actually work, that we know work to improve graduation rates. And we have some things we call foundational strategies. And one of the first foundational strategies is system-wide ownership of the issue or systemic thinking about dropout prevention. Year or so back, I was doing a presentation at a conference. It was a breakout session, and I was standing outside my door. It was a principal's conference, and a lady walked by looking at her program, trying to decide whether to come into my session. And so I spoke to her, and I said, well, this is about how to improve your graduation rates. And her response was, thank God I don't have to go to that. I'm an elementary principal. Well, the message there was she did not own the graduation rate of her school district. It was not her problem or her concern. And that's unfortunate because that's a common mindset. And yet we know that all educators have to take responsibility for this issue. You can ask a typical high school principal, what's your graduation rate? They can tell you. Most high school teachers can tell you because the principal's told them and made them aware of it. But when you go to the middle school or the elementary school, it's a rare administrator or teacher who can tell you what the graduation rate for the school district is.
So system-wide is the first of the strategies. The second one is school-community collaboration. Why and how does the community have to be involved beyond the $61 million?
Well, the community has got to be involved because the community sets the expectation of graduation or non-graduation for the students and the young people in that community. In places where we have seen school districts like yours significantly improve graduation rates, in almost every case there's a community movement behind it, not just a group of school people who are held feet to the fire in accountability, but there's a group of people, business leaders, chamber, political figures, who say, folks, we've got a problem. We've got to do something about it, and we've got to all work on it. One of the things that's very important is communities, without knowing it many times, send a message to the young people of the community. It's fairly common, for example, we all are aware of this, that in college towns, they have high graduation rates. Well, it's no surprise because there's a high expectation, a lot of highly educated parents who expect their kids to graduate. In other places, if there's a mixed message to the kids that, well, we graduate, we don't graduate, it's kind of an option, then that message gets across, and so the kids are impacted by it. We have to realize that a child is probably under the influence and in communication with educators, maybe 20, to 30% of their time. If you count the fact they don't go to school all year, it's a 7-hour school day. And so the message of we expect you to graduate, if it's only coming from school personnel, is not the primary message. If the message from the family and the community is, well, we may graduate, we may not. If you don't graduate, we've got something for you to do. We've got work for you. It's okay if you don't. Then, you know, Uncle Fred or Uncle Aunt Louise didn't. Then, you know, it's a mixed message to the kids. One of the things, to give you an example, if I may take a minute to give you a short story.
Yeah.
There's a place in Georgia, a rural small school district, about 4,000 students, called Hart County. Hart County, historically, one town, Hartwell, Georgia. Hart County was a football powerhouse some 10 years back, and still is, but had a below-the-state-average graduation rate in the 60% range. And a community group became very concerned. Chamber, the business leaders, some business managers, a couple of local bankers, and they got involved with the school system, said, we can't continue to do this. We have to do something about it. And the community started changing the community message. The community suggested, for example, that, and the community leaders suggested to the school district that they change the mascot of the high school, which was a mean bulldog. They were the Hart County Bulldogs. And the community said, let's change the mascot to the grad dog, which is a bulldog with a cap and gown holding up a diploma. Now, changing a school mascot in a football powerhouse town is not something you do lightly, but they did it. And if you go to the Hart County School District website, you'll see a picture of the grad dog on the front of the website holding up a diploma. And that was an interesting message. Another thing the community did, just to give you an example, some community guys got together and bought this obnoxiously large 6-foot-high trophy, and they called it the graduation cup. And they challenged a neighboring school district, which also had some challenges with their high school graduation rate. It was they were the rival football team, last game of the season, everybody shows up, that type of thing. So they challenged them to the Grad Cup Challenge, which said that whoever has the highest graduation rate for the previous year gets the cup for a year. But they didn't just deliver it to the school. They agreed to award the cup to the winning school at the rival football game on the 50-yard line at halftime, with both school boards and both faculties and both fans lined up in front of 10,000 people. Now, that's a message from the community which says graduation is important in the school system. And so when you get that kind of messaging coming across to kids, even from parents who aren't graduates, who say, maybe I wasn't, but you were going to be, then that strong message is a big thing to kids. And so that's why I say in almost every case where we've seen a significant gain in graduation rates, there's been a community movement.
This is Dr. Sandy Addis from he's the director of the National Dropout Prevention Center Network at Clemson University. As I hear you talk about the community, I'm reminded that historically, you know, the Burlington Northern Railroad, we're the Burlington in that name.
Right.
We were and are a railroad town, and we were a manufacturing town like much of the Midwest was, used to be, or in some places still is. We lost a lot of our manufacturing jobs, as most people did, but we've increasingly had some success at buying them back through obscene incentives and whatnot, but that's another argument. But we've gotten a lot of manufacturing jobs back to this community. That's the Chamber of Commerce and the city working on that. And I think as I hear you speak, part of the unsaid part of the message is it used to be whether you got through high school or not, well, you could always work on the railroad. You could always work at Case Company. You could always work at GE. We have a new can company coming here called Silgan, and it's going to have hundreds of jobs. And these are manufacturing wage jobs, which are better wages than retail or, you know, these kinds of things. So maybe the unintended message we're sending as a manufacturing town is these are not college-level jobs. These are high school-level jobs or GED level jobs in some cases. So maybe inadvertently, over 100 years, we've had an unsaid message that goes something like, "Oh, if you get through, that's good, and if not, you know, we've got something for you at the $17, $20 an hour wage." Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense, and of course, we're in a changing workplace, as you're aware. Even the manufacturing jobs are becoming increasingly high tech and require some technology and some other skills, and of course, certainly require the soft skills that students have to function in today's workplace. Then another thing that we often see is that in a community like you're describing, in an economy, in a work environment like you're describing, those businesses can also impact that message. I've seen situations where businesses, even manufacturing and jobs that were traditionally, didn't require high levels of education.